Every once in a while, there's just a tough act to follow. I think this is one of those times. Am I not? It acts like it's where it belongs. Okay. I won't be in a minute. Okay now? Yeah, I can hear me. I'm going to read just a few verses at the end of the story, beginning in verse 39. And what's happened since the part that you just heard about was that the disciples came back. They had been in town buying food, and when they come back, the woman takes off and goes back to town. Probably being around one Jew was one thing, being around 12 or 15 of them, something else, and she just leaves. She tells people in town about what went on. And Jesus chats with the disciples about food the same way he chatted with the woman about water. And then beginning in verse 39, many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed 2 days. And because of the words, many more became believers. They said to the woman, "We no longer believe just because of what you said. Now we have heard for ourselves, and we know that this man really is the Savior of the world." You've heard a couple of the pieces of the story already. Jesus is traveling through Samaritan territory. And quite frankly, the reason the Samaritans and the Jews didn't like each other, anybody know why? The woman actually mentions why. It was a religious battle. The Samaritans went back to their tradition of worshiping on a mountain other than worshiping in Jerusalem. And the Jews, particularly since the time of David, had always seen Jerusalem as the holy city. Samaritans had a holy mountain, the Jews had a holy city, the two holy places didn't get along. How could that happen? But we could tell that this woman was a woman of faith. She knew the Messiah was supposed to come. She knew a bit about what the Messiah was supposed to do. Jesus kind of fit the bill. Although when she goes back to town, it says the story that she told, or what she told the townspeople, was, "I have met a man who says he's the Messiah. Can he be? Is it possible?" Now, if you think about a strong testimony, that's not it. If you want a strong testimony, you say something positive and absolute and direct, and you say, "I have met the Messiah." That's a positive statement. This adding, "you think it's possible" to the end of it, just really is a little on the wishy-washy side. And it's not clear who she talked to. It didn't come out in the skit too much, but this woman, I think it was mentioned though, this woman was an outcast. She was out to get water at noon. Who likes, particularly in the summertime, who likes to go work outside at noon? Women went to get water in the cool of the day in the morning. About the only reason she went at noon was because she didn't get along with the women who went in the morning. Now, there's been a lot of speculation as to why that is. Chances are it had something to do with the conversation she had with Jesus about having had 5 husbands and living with somebody that wasn't her husband. I like that metaphor of eating breakfast. That worked. (Laughter) She wasn't well respected in town. People didn't want to be seen with her, most likely. So who'd she have to tell anyway? Who was going to listen to her? But some folks did, and they apparently passed the word. And so in a relatively short period of time, a bunch of Samaritans from town come out to where Jesus is. And they say, "We're here because of the woman." Okay. We have believed somehow in a person we don't like, that we wouldn't normally associate with, that is not a part of our polite society. She came back with this weird story and was kind of confused and not too sure of herself, and we've decided to trek out in the heat of the day to see what it's all about. None of that makes sense. Except that's what happened. Sometimes I think we want to convey to others their need to know Jesus in a way that satisfies our sensibilities. We want to make positive statements. We want to use all the church language we know to make sure that they understand that Jesus is a really good person to know and a good friend to have. This woman doesn't do any of that. She says something about him that could have been true of some of the soothsayers of the day and the other professional mediums that were wandering around Galilee in those days that were future tellers. She didn't have to say, "Could he be the Messiah?" And he's a Jew. And I'm not sure the Samaritans were looking for a Jewish Messiah. My suspicion is they were looking for a Samaritan Messiah. After all, if you've got the right holy mountain to be worshiping on, that's where the Messiah is going to be and going to come. But she says, maybe. Who knows? How does that draw somebody to know Jesus? And the answer is, it is not what she said. It is not who said it. It is not why she said it. It is the fact that it opened a conversation that in the people who were hearing its mind allowed them to hear God. It is not very much what we do, other than a very brief introduction. God does the rest of the convincing and the convicting. It's not us. We do a lot, and what we do is important. But what saves people is them recognizing in themselves that the Spirit of God is present. Sometimes they need a bit of an introduction to know what it is that they've been feeling and experiencing probably all their lives. I'm beginning to recognize most of you. Is anybody here today for the first time? I just need to know before I say what I'm going to say next. Okay, everybody's been here before, right? Good. There was a study a few years back, and for me, a few probably at this point in life means 20, that indicated that people who came to a particular church for the first time, 80% of them came because there was a problem in their life. Now, that doesn't mean that we ought to train the ushers to, when they see a visitor, to say, "What's your problem?" But it does mean that we ought to be conscious of that fact, that observation, that people come to where they can experience God when they have a problem. You can ask your neighbor to come with you for months and years, And, you know, there's always boats to sail and, you know, cows to milk and all those kinds of things this time of year, maple sap to boil, all kinds of excuses. And then one time they will say, sure, I'll come with you. That's a clue that there is something important going on in their life. It was interesting today in the joys and the concerns at the beginning of the service that instead of announcing three operations in the next 10 days, we could announce three people having some recovery going on. That's a neat thing. We go through day after day, week after week, month after month in our own lives. We go through ups and downs, high points and low points. And sometimes what draws us in is not necessarily just a problem. Sometimes it's having a grandchild born or a great-grandchild. Sometimes it's that kid that you thought was going to be single forever and ever coming home and saying, I'm engaged. It's all kinds of things that create in us a need to connect with God. And quite frankly, we are usually not very good at recognizing those needs in other people. But those are the opportunities, those are the times. Jesus saw something in this woman who was an outcast. He saw something in her that recognized some understanding of who God is. And it was looking for a Messiah. And so he challenged her a bit. It's interesting to note the things that he didn't do. He didn't, in the conversation about how many husbands she'd had, he didn't say, go and sin no more. Do you notice that? He didn't even tell her to go. He didn't tell her to go tell other people he was there. She did that on her own. And because she did it on her own, having sensed from Jesus an acceptance, most good Jews of the day, even if she had a bucket and they wouldn't, would have decided that being thirsty was better than having her get them water. He accepted her for who she was. He was having a normal, intelligent, human, adult conversation with her about faith, about the Messiah. And then the disciples come back. And they get in the way because they want to eat. They've gone into town to buy food. They've got food now. It's time to eat. She just kind of slinks off. And so Jesus has the same conversation with them. They have needs too. Chances are that if at least one of the 12 hadn't bothered to have quite as disapproving a look, she might have stayed. It's always possible. Chances are that if they had been more accepting in the first place, instead of being out on the road at the well, they would have gone into town. They're out on the road. If you think in contemporary terms, if you've been watching the news the last year or so as it relates to this kind of same area of the world, you know that the Palestinians live in either the West Bank or in Gaza, and there is this strip in between called Israel. Well, they're talking about putting a road in so that they can be connected. Chances are pretty good, and I'm not even sure there is going to be the capability to get off the road when you start in one of those territories, Palestinian territories. I don't think you're going to be allowed to get off in Israel. But chances are most Palestinians wouldn't want to. Have you ever noticed how we tend to gather around folks that we like and that like us? Have you noticed how when folks come to this country for the first time, they have a tendency to go to an area of the country where they've got relatives or where they've got kinfolk of some long descendant tortured connection, or where it is just convenient because there are other folks like them that speak the same language, that have the same kinds of customs. You can go into Erie and there's a Little Italy. I used to know where it was. I think it's migrated a little, but it used to kind of center over around 18th and 19th Street, kind of on the near west side. There was an area on the kind of the lower northeast side that was all Eastern European descendants. There's an area up a little higher on the west side that was pretty much all African American descendants. There were these ghettos. Self-imposed in some respects because we tend to go to where we're accepted. It's probably why the disciples hadn't gone into town or hadn't planned on staying in town. But the woman has stayed there and she's not accepted either, even though she is from the town. And she stays and she puts up with it. And she gets her water by herself at noon. And she has a pretty isolated life, most likely. And yet when she sees the Messiah, and she sees him for who he is, she goes back to those folks who don't have much to do with her, and he says, "Do you think it's possible? Do you think it's possible?" How do we reach out to others with the possibility that they might want to know the Messiah as well? I think sometimes it's just as easy as a matter of sharing where we are in our relationship. Not with churchy words, but just where we are. I've had wonderful visits with the two Bobs and Marlene as they recovered from surgeries. And you can tell just by who they are and what they say to the nurses and the other attendants that there is something about them that is confident, is positive, and who knows, but might have met the Messiah. And that comes across. And people that they met that had needs of their own have had some of those needs met because of conversations with the two Bobs and Marlene. It's fascinating. Not churchy talk, but just answering the simple question sometimes of how can you be so positive when here you are? And they can say, because I understand. I get great comfort. And they can tell by the cards that they get great comfort from their friends and their family, but they can say as well, I get great comfort from God. He's a part of me. And it's amazing that when someone is seriously enough in need, they will listen and they will respond to that, because they will see it in action. Have you ever stood in line way longer than you thought you needed to? Usually happens. I can pick a line at Home Depot that's only got one person, and you can tell they're in the process of checking out, being done, paying. And I'll still be there waiting for that to get done when five other people have gone through the line next to me. You ever had that experience? I can pick the wrong line every time. Frequently, when I do get up to the point, I'm dealing with a very frazzled clerk because something hasn't gone well. Probably most things have not gone well that day so far. That's why it took so long. Just to be pleasant. Just to say that's okay. I waited a bit. The person behind me can wait a bit. And anyway, that's what the other lines are for. Yeah, we'll get this done as we can do it. Just to have some compassion for where they are in life. It conveys a lot. And it's amazing how many times people will take that opportunity, as the townspeople did, to then check on it. The townspeople get out of their normal routine in the middle of the day to come out and see Jesus. The clerk might ask, well, how can you be so pleasant? I just say, well, I'm too dumb not to be, but that's really not the reason. And I can get past that, and they'll usually chuckle a little bit, and then I can say, it's easier to be pleasant because God wants me to be pleasant, and I get more pleasant reactions when I'm pleasant. I said, this is all, you know, this getting me checked out is going to go a lot better if I'm a nice guy. You'll be happier, I'll be happier. And that appeals to people. And you can kind of sneak into that conversation, and you don't have to do any more than that because they're looking for what it is about you that's got you at peace. Say, my faith is what makes me pleasant. It's a challenge. It's a different way sometimes of meeting the world around us. Most of the world around us is not out to get us. Most of the world around us is struggling. Not necessarily with the dollars to buy food every day, although way too many are. But most of the world is struggling with how to find the peace that we have. How to find that comfort and that security in their life that we have. They're not particularly looking for theology. They're not particularly looking right at that moment for a Bible verse. But what they are looking for is how me as a kind of a normal human being can be at peace when they're not. And they want a hunk of that. And that's what we can do. We can be like the woman. Go, first of all, recognize that God's response to her faith. Here's Jesus talking to her. To recognize that. And then to go share it. Regardless, in her case, of the consequences. And for us, sharing our faith with people that we meet every day is not terribly threatening. Could have had some consequences for her. And the people respond. They come out and they talk to Jesus and they hear him and they said, well, you know, what you have to say is even better than what she said about you. And they said, will you stay for a while? You mean in a Samaritan town? So one of you going to run back early and take all the no Jews wanted sign down? He doesn't say that. He says, sure, I can stay a couple days. And he does. And people believe because they know him, and people believe because of what the woman said. It is not near as much the particular message we have. Jesus' message and the woman's message, very different. But the reaction to it was the same. Folks had been introduced to the Messiah. And they recognize that because God is already within them. And they respond. We can do more than we think because we don't have to be as well trained as we think. We don't have to be as knowledgeable as the Bible as we think. We don't have to have all the right language that we think we need. And we don't have to be anxious about speaking about our faith to somebody, because probably 8 out of 10 people we do that with are searching for that answer. What we have to do is share what we believe in the language that we use every day with people that we speak with every day. And it maybe doesn't hurt to have our eyes open a bit for those times when we can see stress in a friend's life, or even just an acquaintance or a stranger, and say, how can I help? What can I do to ease your anxiety? It's all it takes. It's probably too easy. And every once in a while, I've noticed if something is too easy, I have a tendency just to not do it, because it doesn't seem worth it if it's this easy. But this is worth it. It is worth sharing what is most valuable to us with other people who can use it. God will use what we say to other people to open their hearts. It's not our persuasiveness, it's not our general goodness, it's the work of God. And the work of God is made easier when we get people thinking on their own about God, about what will give them peace, to give them a language, to be able to listen to what God has to say in their life. This is a fascinating story about the Samaritan woman. I don't think we hear about her again. I'm not sure we even hear much about this town again, other than that we know that from this day forward, it's just talked about in the story, that a significant part of this town believes that Jesus is the Messiah and lives that way and continues to share that. When the Christian church begins after Jesus has ascended and the Christian church begins to move out, they move out into all kinds of territories, including Samaria, and there don't seem to be any big problems because the folks there already know Jesus. And they know him because one outcast woman shared with people that probably didn't like her very well, that I think I've met the Messiah. We can do the same. Amen.